This is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. How is everybody on this fine day?
Oh, wonderful.
Okie dokie.
Wonderful.
All right. Then we shall commence with the opening riff, which comes from a Quo session of April 18th, 2006. Quo says, "There are times in your life when you become aware of an entirely new level of the self, and it is often at such times that your higher self is particularly active in responding to your needs because a great deal is happening at such times. These are usually times when you have been through a dark night of the soul, and as you come to the dawning that lights up your life, at the end of such a difficult period, many epiphanies and realizations may hit you like waves coming in from the ocean."
Thank you, Gary. Was it John the Gospeler who first used the phrase dark night of the soul, or was it someone who came after him? It was someone within the Catholic Church.
The first I'm familiar with.
Uh-huh, okay. All right. At any rate, there's a big question about that, the dark night of the soul. And since it happens to us all, I think I'd like to talk about that a little bit. What is it? Well, you know what it is when you've been through it. Regardless of what you call it, it hurts. It hurts like anything. It hurts worse than... I don't know. It just, you feel like you're going to die. You want to die. You wonder how you could die. You think you should die. There's no reason to live. You've lost your vision. A lot of times there's an issue around which the dark night of the soul circles. It's different for everybody. What's the same about it is the way it feels and the way it works. Talked about the way it feels already, so the way it works is it puts you beyond yourself. You can't operate in a normal fashion. You're beyond it. And if you have information as to how this works, then you know that it's time to pray, it's time to ask. Time to ask with all your heart for help, because there are sources of help waiting, but they are very respectful of your free will, and they need to have an invitation. So you ask all of those who are positively oriented and in compatibility with you to come to you and to impress upon you whatever information, whatever feeling would be helpful. And then you shut up and you listen with all your heart. You go into the silence, you close the door after you, and you listen. And the silence speaks. I can't explain how that works. It's a Zen koan that the silence speaks. sometimes very clearly, sometimes with a vision, sometimes with a clear dream, sometimes very symbolically, sometimes by the radio. You turn it on and it's playing something. Listen to the words. Pass a street you've never passed before. Read a sign. What's the name of that street? There are all kinds of ways to help that come from nature, from your higher self, from angels, from those who come with you, attracted to your seeking and your spirit, from other realms. In any way that they can. They can't use words. They don't have words. But listen. After you've asked with all your heart for help, listen and keep listening and keep listening. Don't give up. And you will get an impression of a direction, of the direction of learning. And you will know that no matter how long this trip, morning will come. The dark night will end. And the dawn will bring with it glory. This has happened to me over and over again in my life. And sweet dear co-travelers of the road, I assure you, I have had difficulties. But faith always brings you the results that you need. It just takes time. It just takes patience. And it just takes tenacity. And I'll tell you what else it takes. Sometimes more than anything else, it takes a sense of humor. The ability to take things lightly, including yourself. You gotta laugh. It's either laugh or cry or scream. And who needs to cry? And who wants to scream? So it's a little better to go with laughter. I'm sorry that the news is that we will all suffer. And I'm sorry that each of you individually will go through this dark night of the soul. But the rewards and the benefits of being in this state of mind are incredible. And it's the way we all grow. We don't grow by studying and thinking and working. We don't grow by building a stairway to heaven. Grow by being willing to ask for help when the dark night hits us. And further, being willing to listen when that help speaks in the silence. May all of you find the way to morning. And may your dawning bring with it glory.
Amen. Carla, I have to comment that there was a fundamental error in what you just shared with us.
Oh, okay.
Stairway to Heaven was made by Led Zeppelin.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah. I always get wrong.
Couldn't let that one go.
I apologize, everybody. And I most especially I apologize to Led Zeppelin.
And to all Led Zeppelin fans out there.
Yeah.
We are so sorry.
Like, oops. Big oops. Okay, moving right along.
Before we move to our first question that was submitted in advance, we have a live caller from area code 313 who is now patched through. Hello, 313. With whom are we speaking?
Hello, Sherelle. How are you?
I'm sorry, what was the name?
Sherelle.
Sherelle?
Yes.
Hello. Hi, we're well. Do you have a question?
Huh? So what do you have for me? Do you see anything coming up?
Our show is not a psychic show. We are a group located in Kentucky named LL Research, and we discuss questions of a philosophical nature, but we don't, unfortunately, have psychic abilities.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, you have a great evening.
Somebody got the phone number wrong, and people have been calling in for weeks. So we apologize.
No,
yeah,
fine.
Sorry,
thank
we can't.
You.
Okay, thank you, and sorry we can't be of greater service.
It's fine.
Well, all right then. We'll have to write Blog Talk Radio and ask.
What to do about it?
Yeah, what is happening? If we're somehow being put in some list for psychic readers and shows, I presume there are some on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, maybe that's ask them to take us off.
Yeah. All right, our first question begins with a statement that came from Lanny D. via Facebook on July 1st. Lanny writes, great show today, everyone. I always enjoy your kind words and insight. So I've been trying to keep questions written down that come to me throughout the day. Wouldn't you know it that writing them down brings the answers to you so much faster? But I do have a question. This is the first of Lanny's questions. We can tackle his other ones on another show. Lanny asks, the Law of One speaks of the importance of both balance and polarizing. These two seem to be contradictory to one another. Is polarizing to one side or the other actually where true balance resides? Balance in terms of polarity seems to be what Quo calls the sinkhole of indifference.
They are related. When we talk about polarizing, we're talking about how our thoughts, words, and deeds are intended, whether they're intended to be of service to others or service to self. And if we can become purely one way or the other, then that's called polarizing. And that does help us somewhat in balancing, because in the balancing process, we're attempting to work on ourselves. Now, we may use the catalyst we get from other people around us, and very likely will. That's where our catalyst usually comes from. But when we attempt to balance, then, we are looking for a response that is in the area of unconditional love. And usually, we have responses that are fairly far away from unconditional love, and it takes a bit of work and meditation and constant use of the catalyst in order to be able to respond or balance the catalyst with love. And once we're able to do that in a certain area, then usually we move on to other areas. And most people only have a handful of areas that they're working on, you know, life lessons that stay with you and repeat themselves and give you an opportunity to consider them and why they're there and what meaning they have to you. And then if you decide that you want to balance these things, then in your meditations at the end of the day, you can go through that process of allowing the catalyst that has set you off in one way or another, either positively or negatively, to come back and to get large, and then you see it getting large, and you then let it go, and you let the opposite come up within your field of vision and experience until it's just as large as the first was. And then you see that there are two possibilities in responding to the catalyst, and you accept both of them as part of the Creator, you accept yourself as part of the Creator. That's the balancing process. And then if you're able to do that balancing, that helps in the polarizing. It makes you a more conscious person. It gives you an idea of how you want to direct your actions and your thoughts and your words. So they are related. They are different processes.
Yeah. The balancing process really refers to your chakras. What you're trying to do is balance your chakras. You're trying to comb out the tangles of your chakras. Each of your chakras, and you've probably heard that term a lot, Ra talks about them a lot, and so do many others. Each of the chakras has an unique and different area that it works on. The red ray chakra at the root of your body is a chakra that works with the issues of sexuality and survival. The orange ray, the next one up, which is in the belly, works with your relationship to yourself and your relationship to others that are friends but do not have a legal relationship with you. And then the yellow ray works with the legal relationships, your family, your parents, your wife or your husband, your kids, your grandkids, cousin Gertie and Uncle Ed. Then you have the glorious green ray chakra, the heart chakra, and it, of course, is located in the heart. The blue ray chakra, located in the throat, has to do with issues of truth and of communication with others. And the located up at the in the throat. And then the indigo ray is located up at the third eye position at your in your forehead, in between your eyes, is where you want to go if you're doing work with silence, meditating, whatever, all those things that are related to that, dream work, healing are big ones. Keeping a record of your thoughts, keeping a record of your reading, thinking about your reading, you know, having meditations on something that inspired you. All those are indigo ray issues. And then your valor ray, you don't work with that really. It sits at the top of your head, and it's a readout of what your balance is at any one time. If you're not balanced in a particular chakra, you stop the energy from the creator that's coming through your body constantly in a stream up your chakras and out the top of your head. And when it comes out the top of your head, hopefully it's blessed with your unique personality, and it creates a beautiful, like a stained glass window of all the white light that you've made. The colors of the rainbow are the colors of the chakras, red, orange, yellow, red. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. Just like Roy G. Biv that you learned in school for the colors of the rainbow. And all of that is written about very carefully in the raw contact. But it's all kind of mixed up there. There's here and there and here and there. So if you want a straight line version of it, you can read my book, Choice 101, which is with each chakra in turn. Guys, fill in and add and subtract and so forth.
I think it's a good point you bring up that the balancing is mainly about the chakras. I think Lonnie has a good question because it does seem sort of contradictory for Ra to both promote the idea of polarity and then also promote the idea of balance. And if you just look at those two sort of abstractly, they seem at odds with each other. But I think the key to the question lies in the fact that the service to self path, as Ra puts it, is that which is not. And that includes an omission of the green ray in our energy spectrum. Ra says that the negative polarity will not use the green ray in their evolution. But balance is the ultimate way of the universe. The Taoist principle, you know, you can look at the yin-yang symbol, and it is signifying basically the ultimate balance within the universe. And so the service to others path would be the path which is, the service to self path is the path which is not. And so the service to others path is working with the balance. They are on the path of trying to reach that ultimate creator within the universe, while the service to self path would rather be trying to puff themselves up as the rightful creator at the exemption of all those around them. They are promoting separation instead of integration, like the service to others path is. Like Ra says in The Balanced Individual, the energies lie waiting for the hand of the creator to pluck harmony. So in choosing to balance, service to other entities become instruments for the creator and are moved to promote that harmony. And that, to me, means polarizing service to others. While the service to self entity would instead reject the ultimate balance, they don't work with balance of the chakras. They work with control and willpower to overcome balance of the chakras, to use the chakras to their advantage, to a point where they can accept the same amount of light as a balanced individual, but instead of being balanced, they are basically controlling their imbalances in a way that allows them to use that light. And so instead of the creator being able to pluck the harmony from their strings, they basically play their own song, which is...
Me.
Yeah, essentially. They play their own, and it can be disharmony. Because that ultimately is what the path is a disharmony, a separation, a dissonance with the ultimate way of the universe. But I also think that beyond the chakra system, Ra also promotes an idea of balance. In their exercises to promote understanding of the mind, they actually say that the polarity of your dimension must be internalized, and then goes on to describe where we have to identify aspects of our mind and identify their opposite and realize that they both exist within our mind. And they don't necessarily talk about the chakras in this instance. And the polarity that they refer to here, I don't believe is the polarity of service to others or service to self. I think it's just the polarity that we experience being in third density, where whatever we express within this reality, there will be an opposite expression within us that is not being expressed. And I think that that balance comes into play with polarizing and when we accept our shadows. Being service to other polarizing beings, we will have a service to self shadow. As Carl Jung said about the shadow, it's the person that we choose not to be. And so when we choose to be service to others, the person that we choose not to be is service to self. And the way that we can balance that, ultimately, and how balance plays in with polarity, is instead of rejecting the shadow self and judging it as something that is bad, we realize that it's part of us and we accept it as part of our consciousness. And even though it's not something that we are activating within our reality, it is still something that we are accepting as part of the universe, as part of ourselves as the creator. And in that acceptance comes the balance between the two polarities. But that is still something that only a service to others individual will do because they are on the path of which is an acceptance of all things, which is what the ultimate way of the universe is, what we will all end up being at the end, even if service to self tries their hardest to be the only creator in the universe. They eventually have to accept the other polarity. And so we can accept the older polarity as service to others because that's just the way that service to others is.
Lanny's question asks, basically, he's asking, does it seem imbalanced to polarize in one direction or another? Because it seems, at the surface of it, to be lopsided. You're going and focusing and throwing all your energies on one path, where meanwhile it seems to be lacking the whole picture because it's not balanced or it does not include the other path. But I think Austin hit on a really great point by highlighting how the path that is not taken is still accepted by the positive polarity. It's still loved. It's still embraced. It's still accepted as part of the self. It's just not actively walked. In terms of polarity being balanced, I think most of Ra's instructions about balance were or did pertain to the chakras, but I think ultimately anything within manifestation has manifested, that it has come into existence implies that it's partial. that it expresses some partial aspect of the Creator and necessarily has its opposite, because manifestation is an experiment in dualism and manyness. So, you know, hot has its cold, up has its down, patience has its impatience, male has its female, and Ra even said describes somewhere the balance between the known and the unknown, and polarity also must be balanced. But I don't think, as you guys are getting at too, that it's imbalanced to pursue the positive polarity. And to support that position, I was just going to quote a few Ra responses. For instance, in 32:14, Ra says that the indigo ray is opened only through considerable discipline and practice, largely having to do with acceptance of self, not only as the polarized and balanced self, but as the creator, as an entity of infinite worth. So there you have Ra saying polarized and balanced, not that they're mutually exclusive, not that to be polarized is to be imbalanced, but there is a balance within the positive polarity. In 38:9, Ra says, to become balanced and begin to polarize properly, it is then necessary to investigate movements of all kinds. Again, we have balance and polarity working in concert together. In 57:6, Ra says, you first, as a mind-body-spirit complex, balance and polarize the self, connecting the inner light with the upward spiraling inpourings of the universal light. And that's another balance, of course, that takes place through the medium of the chakra system, the balance between the inner light, which Ra describes as our birthright, and that universal, I'm not sure if I'm using the right adjective, but the light which enters through the south pole of the self, the light of experience. And then Ra in 64:6 says, we seek, and this is an answer that comes from their perspective in sixth density and helps to shine a little light, I think, on how balance, on how these two concepts of balance and polarity come into play. And Ra says, we seek now without polarity. Thus we do not invoke any power from without, for our search has become internalized as we become light love and love light. These are the balances we seek, the balances between compassion and wisdom. And they go on, and then they say, your rituals at your level of progress contain the concept of polarization, and this is most central at your particular space-time. So again, I take from that Ra is emphasizing that there is balancing that the entity must needs do, but that happens within the context of the positive polarity, much as Austin described, and is not imbalanced to polarize positively.
I think they're encouraging us to work in third density, since that's where we are, rather than trying to get to six.
Yeah, we're not here to solve paradoxes.
Yeah.
In third density per se. And in 67:26, they are describing the great humor of Don's attempt to offer service to the negative polarity, and they describe that dynamic between service to others and service to self. And they describe how the positive entity can reject the service of the negative polarity. And Ra says, you have here a balanced and polarized view of the Creator, again linking balance and polarization. And then to wrap my response up, they say, Ra says in the very first session, in the very first question, we are those who are of the law of one. In our vibration, the polarities are harmonized, the complexities are simplified, and the paradoxes have their solution. We are one, that is our nature and our purpose. And what struck me about that one is that Ra says the polarities are harmonized. Not that they were ever imbalanced to begin with, per se, but rather that they come into harmony in sixth density. And maybe that implies they're, I guess they're out of, did you say that they're out of harmony? No, I don't know. But Austin, to really wrap up my response, Austin brought up another good point, and that's that I hadn't considered before, and that's that is the negative polarity, does it use the mechanism of balance, or does it seek intentionally imbalance and seek to control that imbalance? And I would have presumed that there is a balance within that the negative entities have to do within their own processes as well, but maybe it is accurate to see it as imbalance. That's my long answer.
Well, I think that's a good point. And I think just as they imply, at least, that Jesus the Christ even was imbalanced in his total giving of himself for love and martyrdom, was it wise, you know. Sure, it was loving. It was loving in the most wonderful way. It was loving in a way that's inspired us for thousands of years. Was it wise? No. You know, and they are, you know, sure they're wise, the negative polarity. They're very wise and clever. Are they loving? No. Definitely not, except for loving themselves. And if you're God, you know, they put themselves in the position of the Creator, then of course they're going to love themselves. After all, they're the Creator. And anything they need, anything they want is okay because they're the Creator. Is it balanced? No. Okay, you know, but it makes ultimate use of this polarity. When it gets to sixth density, which is the density of unity, it can't operate. There no longer is any place to go. They run up against a total blank wall. They can't learn anymore. They can't develop. And it's our nature to want to evolve beyond where we are. So eventually, each entity chooses to open up the green ray chakra and start the work a little bit late, but they work fast. If that makes any sense.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think using Jesus as an example helps bring another point that I often quarrel with, and I don't think that Lonnie was necessarily making this misconception, but I see this misconception made a lot with people who are new to the material and they just come across the idea of service to others and service to self, and initially they think that does not seem like a balanced system because they view service to others as only service to others with the exception of self, and they view service to self as anything which serves the self, and not necessarily the polarizing service to self as Ra describes. But they would say just feeding yourself, just meditating, making sure that you're comfortable and happy, they think that that is what Ra is referring to when they say service to self, and so they say you need a balance between service to others and service to self. But I think, really, like you were talking about, Carla, the martyrdom aspect would be an imbalanced service to others, but a wise service to others entity would realize that they are able to continue serving others if they don't die. They're able to serve others better if they take care of themselves, if they make sure that they're in a place where they're happy and balanced and able to function properly in society. If they feed themselves and meditate right, they're able to serve others even better. And so realizing that their full capacity to serve others requires them to be a healthy, happy individual who does things for themselves, that is still a service to others attitude, I think, and a very wise one, whereas a polarizing service to self attitude would just serve self at the exception of others. They wouldn't see others as something that needed to be served at all. They would just see them as pawns on their own personal game board to be used in whatever way will make them happy in whatever desires that they do have. And like I said, I don't think Lonnie was making any kind of misconception like that, but I just wanted to make that point because I see it made a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right there. No, I think he or she was simply saying, you know, these two things just don't seem to fit. And it takes really careful reading and thinking about what Ross said in the whole of conversations that Don had with them to figure out how it all works in Ra's concept of the, you know, the way things are and the way things work. Ra has a beautiful conception of it that has no internal problems with it that I've ever been able to find out. It's the only philosophical system that has no internal difficulties. the rest of them tend to come a cropper with one issue or another. What most people feel is Rod's weakness is that Rod doesn't talk enough about what service to self is. And a lot of people would argue that service to self includes what you do to take care of yourself, and it's just not true. You have to take care of yourself, and you have to understand yourself, because that's the first thing you do. Know yourself, accept yourself is way back the second thing that you do. The process of getting to know yourself is really, really hard, and it takes years because of the fact that we're told what we are and how we should be, and we buy the whole thing, or we buy what part of it we do buy, and then we spend our teenage years and our early adult years, you know, combing out all of the things that aren't us from the way we act and the way we think. And we get those voices out of our heads that used to be there, and we got confused thinking they were our voices, but they're not. You know, they're our mother's voices, our father's, a teacher, a hero. There's somebody else's voice in there instead of our own. We have to find out what our voice is saying. And that's not selfish. That is working with the self so you could get yourself known and out of the way and loved and accepted. And then you can love and accept the world.
That is the deal. Does anybody have any further thoughts to offer on that question?
Nope.
All right. Moving along to our next one. This comes from, and I hope I pronounce your name right, Janice J., through the Law of One Raw Material Study Group. And Janice asks, what are the consequences, if any, of causing harm in this world and to others after death in terms of the overall growth of the entity's soul? I think this question would be great to take into study that has been done through past life regressions and hypnotherapy of testimony of the actual mechanics of pre-incarnational planning and post-incarnational review and everything that happens between lifetimes. There's Ra touches on the workings of pre-incarnational programming during the course of the incarnation, but the Law of One doesn't examine too much about what exactly happens between lives, how examples of how karma works out, how karma is engendered, etc. So, like, sources like Michael Newton and Brian Weiss and Robert Schwartz, and there are others who examine this sort of material, would be great to look at when considering this question. The only other thing I have to contribute is that Ra says in 1229 that an entity which acts in a consciously unloving manner in action with other beings can become karmically involved. So that speaks to how the mechanism of karma begins through conscious unloving action, but it doesn't exactly say, as Janice is asking, what are the consequences of consciously unloving people? How does that karma play out, etc.?
Yeah, I would have no idea of what's possible to do to harm somebody else after you're gone. You know, is it really possible for the energy between incarnations to cause harm to entities that are still incarnate?
I think Janice, and I could be misreading the question, but I think Janice is saying, what are the consequences after death if you have caused harm in this world?
Oh.
Yeah, the way it's worded, it could go either way.
Okay. Well, that's probably it, because I was struggling. I had no idea, you know, how to answer that. And that's probably the way she meant it. And I think that, yeah, if you think about karma, what Ra talks about is planning the next lifetime. You plan what lessons you want to learn and what work you want to do. And if you've been a an unloving person in one incarnation, then that does start the wheels of karma moving. We had an interesting session of hypnotherapy where there was this 9-year-old who was highly allergic to everything that grew. He could not go outside. I mean, it got worse as he got older instead of better. Usually allergies like that yield to teenagehood, and once you're grown, you don't have those allergies. But this poor boy was having a harder and harder time just living, and he couldn't even go outside, and whatever he was breathing inside had to be controlled. He was just in a pitiful shape and very unhappy. So Don questioned him, took him back to a previous lifetime, and the boy talked about living as a very rich man, growing to great old age, and just sitting in his gardens, and he employed literally hundreds of gardeners on his huge estate, and he loved to smell the flowers and look at the beauty. That's all he did. He didn't have any thought at all for any of these people that he paid way too little. As a matter of fact, he didn't pay them. He just allowed them to earn a pittance living on his land. So in this incarnation, the result of it was that he was so allergic. So Don asked him, well, now that he got his higher self on the horn. He asked the little boy to go contact his higher self, and the boy obligingly did in this, you know, hypnotized state. It doesn't occur to anyone to say, well, I don't know what a higher self is. He just said, okay, and he did it, and he said, okay, I've got a higher self now. And so he said, Don, ask the higher self if it's okay, now that he understands what he's done, if that's it, if he can become a regular person and go outside and live a normal life. So Larry, this fellow that was doing the hypnosis with Don, goes over to the piano that's sitting in the room where they're doing the hypnosis and scrapes some gardenia pollen off of the piano and just puts it in his hand, takes it over, and after the boy is, you know, is counted up and he does remember everything about the conversation he had with his higher self and that he's been told he's an okay guy now, he's healed, Larry blows this pollen right in his face. Now, this would put him in the hospital normally. Doesn't do anything to him. So the boy experiments. He goes outside. He's okay. His mother reported to Don quite some time later that the boy had become normal, that he had no symptoms anymore. It was a miracle. And that's the way karma worked in his case. So you can kind of extrapolate from that to see that there are different ways that karma plays out throughout incarnations. But if you have been unloving towards someone else or towards yourself, you will have the results of that in incarnations to come. Another interesting fact is that Jim was given a reading during the raw contact from a psychic that he knew. And the psychic said that we had work to do together and that we'd done work together before. And then the psychic told the story of how Don and Jim were two brothers, and one of them was married and had this child. And I was the child. I was a little boy. And the wife died during childbirth, so the men share the care of this child. And the little boy was sickly and needed care all the time, constantly, But they adored this child, and they were glad to do it. And the child died at the age of, what, Jim, 5?
Right.
Okay, so you can also extrapolate from that that it was preparing Don and Jim for the fact that I was going to be fragile in this life and need taking care of. And it was always remarkable to me how they never minded that. They never minded anything that they had to do. They were always glad to help, no matter what. There was no question about it. I never had two more completely devoted people in my life than Don and Jim. And so I think that that's also the way karma works. We do work together. We do, you know, incarnate again and again in family groups because that's intensifies the potential for learning and for service.
Austin or Jim, you guys have anything to add?
No, not for that.
No, I don't think so.
All right. Our next question comes from Dave K., who writes, what does it mean that I dreamt about the fourth density thought war before I even knew about the concept? I felt like I lived it already.
It's a good question. I don't think any of us could really have the capacity to answer this question in a meaningful way. Perhaps, Dave, you took part in some kind of thought war somewhere on some level. Maybe you're a wanderer who has experienced it before. I'm not sure where your information about the fourth density thought war comes from, because Rod does talk about it some, but they don't go into great detail about how it really plays out and how what the experience would be like for a fourth density entity. But if it resonated with you and it seems like your dream was similar to what Ra was describing, I think there's a whole slew of possibilities for why you may have dreamt that before learning about it. You know, there's lots of, I guess I would describe them as energy streams kind of floating around that we can tap into, different types of entities offering ideas to us, offering stories. Our dreams offer symbolism, and sometimes they take advantage of real-life scenarios and things like that. So not sure there's much we could do to answer your question for you. It would be a great question to take into meditation, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we have no idea exactly in any meaningful way, as Austin said, so well. But the thing of it is, if something happens to you and it strikes you, you know, you're asking about it, so obviously it struck you and you've thought about it, really, you know, lean on that, because that's the nature of learning, you know. It's you go from meaningful thing to meaningful thing. You don't hang on to some concept that's become dead to you. You follow the path of your interest. Who was it, Jung, that said folly or bliss? I don't know.
Joseph Campbell.
Okay, thank you. A Jung talker about her.
Right. Yeah, he loved Jung.
Yeah. So, really, that's the key to your spiritual path. Create your spiritual path as you go. If you're working within a church situation, which I've done all my life, use that. Lean on that. But don't be limited by that, because that's not the nature of your own personal spiritual path. You've got one, and you find out where you're going next because of your interest. So it really, you know, is a good idea to work with that concept until you're satisfied.
The only other tidbit I would have for your consideration is that a good friend of ours, Lana, she had been a seeker probably her whole life, maybe just her adult life, I'm not sure, but a seeker for a long time, hadn't yet found the Law of One, and had received these impressions of this story that involved positive beings and negative beings and beings from higher dimensions that come to Earth to assist, and it may have even included an element of harvest, I'm not sure. And it was just this complete world, and she, I think she committed it all to writing. She thought it was a piece of fiction. And then she discovers a law of one and finds all this cooperation with this story that she had received. So, you know, one among many possibilities for your dream is that maybe it was some, a kind of harbinger of what was to come. Maybe it helped lay some groundwork in you.
Mm-hmm. I had a very, very real dream. And in hypnosis, I explored it more. And it's in Secrets of the UFO because it was during the gnosis in Chapter 8. But in it, I was experiencing life on another planet. And one of the things that I experienced was fighting these steel, huge metallic spiders fighting trying to help a civilization battle these evil spiders. And come imagine my absolute astonishment when one of the Star Wars episodes had these something that looked very like my dream in it. It was weird, man. And so, you know, these thought forms are indeed floating around, and there are a million of them. And exactly how it all fits together, we won't know in this lifetime. We'll have to enter a larger life and explore further realms to discover more and more of how this information all fits together. But it's all worth looking at. Don't throw anything out just because it's outside the box. You know, follow it. If it interests you, by all means, get on your mighty steed and set your lance of truth and love and beauty at it and go for it.
I think that's a really good point, especially, like you said, if, Dave, you're asking us about this, this is the question you chose to ask. It is meaningful. And so I've always found the next step to, once I discover something meaningful about myself, is to go inside and ask, why is this meaningful to me? And sometimes it takes just tons of self-inquiry and just sitting and thinking about it and trying to find the roots to why something stood out to me. But it always leads to a deeper part of myself that I can look back and then say, oh, this is why this stood out to me. It was a sign pointing towards this, something deeper. And so I think it's good advice for Dave.
Jim, anything to add?
No, not there.
All right. Well, we've got time to squeak in this final question, and then we'll call it quits. It comes from Nicholas R. via Facebook. Nicholas writes, it is a more lighthearted query of tongue-in-cheek flavor, and it is asked in the hope that I can bring a laughter to the show, especially from our dear Carla and Jim. He quotes Session 22, Question 29. Questioner asks, is there any way that we can make the instrument more comfortable or anything that we can do for her? Ra responds, I am Ra, the instrument as well. It is somewhat less easy to maintain clear contact during a time when some or one of the entities in the circle of working is or are not fully conscious. We request that entities in the circle be aware that their energy is helpful for increasing the vitality of this contact. We thank you for being conscientious in the asking. And then Nicholas asks about that quote. So my question is twofold. First to Jim and secondly to Carla. Jim, was the material covered in this session of little interest to you? And to my dear Carla, has Jim ever fallen asleep on the job since that time?
I wasn't the one who fell asleep. This is one of the very few times that we had a guest at the session, and he was actually the person that was in the first Ra session learning how to channel from Carla. And then I guess about 22 sessions later, he decided he wanted to come back and see how we were doing. And he decided that his technique for meditation was going to be to lie flat on the floor. We suggested to him that he might go to sleep. He said, no, I'll be fine. Well, he went
immediately, yeah. Without further ado, he started snoring. Snored throughout the session, according to the guys.
That is, so many people who read the Law of One would love nothing more than an opportunity to experience that, to be a part of that, of a Ra session, and he goes to sleep.
Right.
Oh, my God.
We should have known it wasn't Jim then.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim was working his tail off, just sending love to everybody. And
for you.
And, yeah, to me and to, well, to the working. And he would come through the session and he would be sweating. He gave it everything he had. He did a wonderful job of being the most incredible, what you'd call, the word I want, Jim?
Battery.
Battery, yeah. He was the most incredible battery you could ever hope for, because he knew what he was doing, and he was charging the group. He was charging me with energy. He wasn't at all asleep. He has at times fallen asleep while we were having a Sunday session, and he just couldn't help it, but that was because he was working so hard at Jim's lawn service and so weary all the time that he stopped closing his eyes in the sessions because he didn't want to fall asleep. But every once in a while it would be too much for him and he'd just conk out. But never ever during a raw session. No.
A quick question about being the battery that just came to me before we close the show, and that said, Jim, during the raw contact, during the actual session itself, was your experience a more passive one of sitting there mindfully and passively sharing the power, or did you consciously intend and focus over and over on I'm sending love, I'm sending light?
In my inner field of vision, I saw Carla lying on the bed, and I saw her energy centers and the various colors, and I would send energy to each one in turn, starting at the base and going up to the crown and continue back and forth, just helping energy to flow through was my idea. And that was during the session. The night before sessions, we discovered that if we had sexual intercourse, that it fueled the session with energy. Hara would speak to it now and then as transferred energy. Since we have so and such transferred energy, we may go so much further. Anyway, so there were two different ways of energizing the sessions.
We were both glad to follow Ra's instructions in that regard.
Got a hall pass for fun.
Absolutely.
So you kept this visualization practice going the entire session?
Yes.
Wow. I have not kept my mind on one point like that for more than 5 minutes, much less some of those sessions are like an hour and a half or longer. All right, well, we will wrap up the show there. And actually, before Carla says goodbye to everybody, I will invite everyone to join our annual homecoming event that happens Labor Day week 29 through 31 this year. You can find more information on bringforth.org's homepage under the news section. It's a great event. It's an opportunity to meet Jim and Carla and interact with other spiritual seekers who also enjoy this information. Carla, would you like to say goodbye to everybody?
I would. Goodbye to everybody, and you know that we love you all.
Love you all.
You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk to you then.
I run through a wooded aisle and chase the sunlight mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, and the tree line breaks in the wide open space. I stare at a bright red sun, search all day and never find anyone. I'm moving, making sky and seasons change in a blink.